There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Now just stop and think about some of the happiest moments in your life. Imagine yourself kind of popping in and having a look and see who was there in those special moments. Chances are you were with your friends. Now, as social animals, we're naturally wired to connect, to value friendship and community, to feel lucky when we feel unexpected pleasures from allies, confidants, playmates, amongst the throngs of strangers around us. So friendship is a wonderful and often paradoxical thing. It seems to spring out of nowhere, out of the beautiful chaos of daily life, to form an easy basis of luck and chance. But also, it involves a little bit of attention. It needs care and intention. And friendships, well, sometimes they can go wrong. Today, we are talking about making friends, staying friends, toxic friends, and breaking friends, as Chastity O'Connell joins us from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. She's a mental health counsellor and is here to offer emotional support to anyone in need, as well as her expert insights on today's topic. Her areas of practice include depression, anxiety, adjustment disorders, marital discord, identity challenges, and socio-emotional and behavioural challenges in children. But you are welcome to get in touch on the topic of friendship this afternoon. Hello, Chastity.
Hi, Helen.
Lovely to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I'm really excited about this afternoon.
Me too. I think it's a topic that'll resonate with a lot of people.
Well, we've all had friends, and we all look back to those early first friendships when we're almost babies. We're put together by our mums or family. And there's often the kind of, they're both two, so they're going to get on. You know, it's that kind of age thing, which is always quite frustrating. What do you think brings people together once we get past that being put together by well-meaning family? What attracts people to other people in a friendship basis?
Well, those initial early relationships, in elementary school, high school, and later university, and even work, offer this really unique opportunity for people to have proximity to one another. So some of it is just as simple as you're around people with similar schedules, similar stages in life in a lot of ways, and so that there's a natural tendency to, of course, socialize and interact.
But so a lot of it's to do with opportunity.
It is. And I think there, not to underestimate the importance of having this sort of similarity with scheduling. And that sounds like a really stodgy way of saying, but...
No, but I know exactly what you mean. And actually, Sonal, our producer, and I were talking about this yesterday, about opportunities of making friends. And if you work a funny schedule, you're working shifts, or you're not in an office environment where you're working 9 to 6 with people and you've got that opportunity to go, hi, let's go, get a break together, or let's go do something after work, or if you're not working and you're kind of around people who have a different schedule, they've got kids to pick up, or to find the opportunity to make connections can be really difficult.
Absolutely. And I don't want to underscore the importance of sort of the emotions that go along during that, building those early friendships. And so if you think about being in elementary school or high school, you're forced to see everybody every day. And, if you think about that first day where everybody goes into class and you're nervous, you feel a little uneasy, are they going to like me?
Feeling this very second thinking about that.
See, isn't it?
I think anxiety inducing. So then how do we start filtering out of that class of, 20, 30 kids who's going to be our people?
Well, I think part of it is just, it's a giant exercise in exposure therapy. I mean, I know that the clinician in me is boiling it down to its most basic form, but if you think about making relationships after 30 or after 40, for example, where there's a lot more effort involved, there's a lot more emotional awareness of just how, uneasy it can be. Will they like me? Will I like them? Was my joke funny? Oh, it looks like it wasn't funny. Can I talk about my deeply held beliefs now?
Is now the right time? And it's interesting, actually, because a Finnish study in 2016 found that men and women make more and more friends until the age of 25. And then the numbers begin to fall quite rapidly and continue to fall throughout the person's life. And this can be all sorts of factors. It can be things like moving house or, in the case of many expat countries, literally moving continents, falling in love. And actually, an Oxford study found that falling in love can cost you two close friends.
It's not surprising.
That's crazy. So let's go back to basics. What do you think makes a good friend? What traits?
A good friendship. Well, I think it'd be helpful to start with defining friendship.
Okay. And how are you going to do that, Chastity O'Connell?
I'm going to pass the buck and basically say that in the research, there's a lot of debate on what constitutes a friendship in the first place, on defining the qualities and characteristics. So I think we'll just keep it really simple and look at just some main features of what friendship entails. Number one, it's voluntary. So you don't feel compelled to be around that person, and they don't feel compelled to be around you. There might be a little bit of pressure involved where, you know, you might feel uneasy and you're like, I really like them and I want to get to know them better, but I don't like the uneasy feeling I am when we're trying to, you know, ask each other where the other person is from and where's the best restaurant, those kinds of questions. So voluntary. A second quality is that it involves companionship. There's something about being around the other person and relating to one another in a positive way. And it happens over time. There's a degree of liking involved. You start to like them more, they like you more, and of course, caring. You end up caring about the other person, they care about you, you become important in their lives, and vice versa. So I think if we look at friendship in that context, that also gives us insight into what makes a good friend. And so that was very general, but then we can start, you know, sort of branching off those topics like companionship, for example. If you were to sort of zero in on that, well, what's involved in companionship? Well, that there's an element of reciprocity, you know, understanding that you're going to do kind things for them and vice versa, that you will be sharing, that you'll be open and honest and vice versa. If you're looking at things like liking, you know, are they dependable? Are they there when they say they're going to be there? So this is where you get into some of those, I guess, qualities or attributes that you find in the sort of friendship quizzes that relate to honesty, trustworthiness, dependability, those kinds of things.
Does that mean that some people, just by their very nature and personality, some people just aren't good friends, wouldn't make a good friend?
Oh, goodness, you would ask that.
I think I'm just running through people that I know and I'm like, okay, yeah, I choose them to be in my life. But there are some people I choose not to be in my life because they don't display traits of someone that I would consider to be a good friend.
Sure. So that question, so it reminds me of one of the sort of, not controversial, I should say arguable topics in the friendship research, which is, do opposites attract? Or is it similarities? And so you'll see a lot of the research that points to, oh, similarity is important. Birds of a feather flock together. But then you hear stuff like opposites attract. So what ends up happening is looking at, are the things that are different still compatible?
And that's the crux.
Yes. And there's also an element of flexibility, you know, to what extent people are open to embracing different qualities in other people.
Meeting in middle and compromise.
Absolutely. And for some people, you know, personality trait wise, they're going to do better with other types of people. You know, that might mean that certain types of people are off limits in terms of friendship. I shouldn't say off limits, but I'm thinking of a better way to say that, that they'll have more areas for joining and companionship than others. Oh, this is complicated.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's why we've got 2 hours to talk about it. Yes. Chastity O'Connell is here to answer your questions. So if you've got a friendship dilemma, if you're in a bit of a pickle about friendship, someone that you maybe want to get out of your life and don't know how to do it, perhaps you're worried about someone in your family and one of their friendships that you think might not be any good, do message us. Equally, if you want to share a lovely positive story about friendship, we'd love to hear it this afternoon. We're going to be asking, how many friends should you have? And mentally, how many can you have? And we're talking about friendship here on Dubai Today. I'm joined in the studio by mental health counsellor Chastity O'Connell from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. Someone I now consider a friend.
Aww. Oh, that meant so much to me.
But isn't it interesting where you meet people? kind of as you do move through life. Mm-hmm. Some of my most treasured friendships are with people that I never really expected that would be the case. Mm-hmm. How long have you been in Dubai now, Chastity?
This time, 2 years, I think 2.5. But I had been here for a while. So we went back to the States for a few years.
Okay, so think back to that first time that you came to Dubai.
Oh, goodness.
How did you meet people and who were your friends?
Oh, good gravy. Not expecting this question. So when I first came here, so I was traveling back and forth for a few years before moving. And so my husband was already based here and he was involved in, you know, athletic things. And so I ended up meeting a lot of his friends and his friends becoming our friends. And at the same time, it was important for me to also feel like I had
your own thing going on.
Absolutely. So I was very active in trying to reach out because it was such a big change for me moving from the States to Dubai.
Did you have kids at that stage?
I did not have kids. And in some ways, I think it is harder. Mm-hmm. Children, I think having children in the school run and so forth really does connect you with some kind of community. And, you know, the extent to which you want to be involved in that community is your choice.
It is.
But having
You've got that common ground from the outset.
Absolutely. So I did a lot of volunteer work. I tried to do a lot of volunteer work as well as, of course, coffee mornings.
Oh.
So many coffee mornings.
Coffee mornings are such a trap. Because that's the thing. If you go to coffee morning... And I did this when I was on my maternity leave. And if you got sat next to a dud person, you stuck with them for an hour. And you could be looking over the other side going, they look like they're having so much fun. They're having a great chat. And I'm, you know, I don't want to be here. It's really hard.
It can be. And especially if they are those massive coffee mornings where you've got like
20 plus people.
Yes. So it is real. There is a sweet spot for numbers. And you really do need someone that is sort of coordinating it to sort of draw out people. That is key.
Facilitate conversations.
Yes, great work.
Thank you. So I moved here 11 and a half years ago. And I look back at not necessarily the friends, but I remember someone saying to me in the first 3 months of being in Dubai or in any new country, just say yes to every invitation. Mm-hmm. Just say yes. And I came out of those 3 months. And I knew Dubai after that, you know, quite well. But I looked back at the people I was kind of, you know, going out with, and, you know, you cling on to friendships. It's a bit like when you go to university and it's not that freshers week as we have in the UK, and you're all thrown in together and you feel like you need to make a bond as quickly as possible to make you feel normal and to give you a person, to give you somebody. And I'm still friends with quite a few of them, but other people, I'm like, what was I thinking? Mm. And then, you know, what tends to happen is I have a bit of a Facebook cull on their birthday. If you're like, this so-and-so's birthday, and like, I haven't spoken to you in 6 years. Horrible things to defriend someone on their birthday.
I've heard there are better times to do it.
I don't think they get a notification, do they?
I don't know.
So let's talk about Mr. Dunbar. So we've talked about what kind of makes a good friend and qualities of a good friendship. But how many people can we be friends with in terms of close friendships, wider groups, and even people that we would know the name of?
Mm. Yes. Yeah, so Dunbar's theory on friendships is a very complex one related to neocortical limbic areas. So
What?
We're not going to talk about that.
Thank you.
Yes. We're just going to talk about the sort of numbers that he was able to generate. And it was somewhere between 100 to 200 people that we can be friends with.
That's a lot.
I know. Before anyone panics out there. No. Don't. Let's stay with that. What did you just say, Helen?
I have 100 to 200 friends.
That's so... What is misleading, I think, is sometimes difficult to talk about this, is because you hear that number and you think, what? But when we're talking about friendship, and we're talking about friends, and they're not actually talking about close friendships. And in fact, okay, Dunbar, in boiling down the theory, came away with this idea that we can really only maintain 5 close friendships at a time. 5 close friendships.
And that might include family member as well. Yes. It could be a sister or a cousin or a brother that you're close to.
Sure.
Okay, I feel better. Thank you, Chastity.
Yes, no problem. And that you know, how did he conceptualize, remember, you know, calling back to the idea that the research has a lot of difficulty defining what friendship is. That's just a word for someone that you may or may not have a connection with. So in that context, we're not talking about close friends at all.
So this is talking about five would be your close support group. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of moves up a little bit. So he says the second layer of closeness would be another 10 people. Mm-hmm. So if you're having a dinner party, you'd maybe include them. And then the third layer is about 35 people on top of that. And the final layer includes 100 for a total of about 150 people. But what I think is interesting about this is while the group sizes throughout those different stages do tend to stay pretty stable, mm-hmm. and the composition can be quite fluid. But so your five today might not be the same five as they are in a year's time. For instance, it's not a case of I've chosen my five.
Yes.
Stuck with them for life.
It is very dynamic.
So, yeah, people drift apart, people fall between layers, and people sometimes just fall out of them mm-hmm. altogether. Mm-hmm. Now, let's have a little chat about types of friendship. This is The Atlantic talking about how the internet is changing friendship.
We live in a time of constant communication. No matter where in the world our friends are or how long it's been since we've seen them, as long as they stay on social media, we never have to lose touch. But is social media strengthening friendships or making them shallower? According to anthropologist Robin Dunbar, the highest number of people you can maintain a meaningful relationship with at one time ranges from 100 to 200, depending on how social you are. And many of us have a lot more social media connections than that. Friendship researcher William Rollins divides friendships into three categories: active, dormant, and commemorative. A friendship is active if you're regularly in touch with this person, if you feel you can call on them for emotional support, and if you pretty much know what's going on with their lives. A dormant friend is someone you have history with, but who you haven't spoken to in a while. But if you were in the same town as them, you would definitely hit them up and it wouldn't be weird. And then a commemorative friend is someone who was important to you at an earlier time in your life, but you don't really expect to see or hear from them, maybe ever again. You remember them fondly, but they remain firmly in the past. Or they would have before social media. Facebook is like a trophy case for these commemorative friendships. You can see what your childhood camp friend thinks about politics. You can get a happy birthday message from your old Little League teammate. As you grow older, more and more of your active friendships will become dormant or commemorative. That's because friendships naturally fade as people grow up. According to the American Time Use Survey, young people aged 15 to 19 spend the most time socializing per day, while older adults have less time to spend with their friends. One study found that the more people move, the more willing they were to get rid of their objects. But the more willing they were to get rid of their objects, they also reported being more willing to cut social ties too, which suggests that people who move a lot may see their friendships as more disposable. But a friendship isn't the same as that crumpled soccer team sweatshirt that you finally threw out after your third move. Technology offers us a way to extend the lifespan of these friendships, even long-distance ones, with minimal effort. But some of those friendships aren't really living. It's more like they're on life support. According to friendship researcher Emily Langan, any contact at all is the bare minimum of what it takes to keep a friendship alive. So if you write on someone's Facebook wall or comment on their Instagram, you're doing a form of friendship maintenance. Social media allows you to maintain more friendships, but more shallowly. But if you just focus on your closest friends, it's also a tool that can help you deepen your relationships. The more platforms friends use to communicate, in addition to seeing each other in person, the stronger their relationship. Researchers call this media multiplexity theory. So, social media can both strengthen the friendships you care about and keep some relationships alive past their natural expiration date. Friendships are a uniquely flexible kind of relationship because, unlike with our family members or romantic partners, there are no clear expectations or obligations. This makes it easy to drop them when things get busy, but it also means that a period of dormancy doesn't mean that the friendship is over. In a series of interviews Rollins did with middle-aged Americans, he found that many still consider themselves to be friends with people they hadn't been in touch with in a long time, but they felt like they could pick right back up where they left off. So maybe that's the biggest gift the internet gives us, a place to find our friends when we're ready to pick up where we left off. The effort has to come from you, and liking a status won't be enough, but when you're ready, your friends are there, in your pocket, waiting for you to reconnect.
That was The Atlantic talking about the effect the internet has had on friendship. I'm joined this afternoon by Chastity O'Connell, here to answer your questions. Do get in touch, 4001, or use the Dubai iMessenger app. Message here, no name on this one, saying, I love a good friendship edit. Have a look through Facebook and defriend anyone you haven't heard from or contacted in a year. It feels amazing. Love it. Brutal, but love it. And Charlotte's saying, I met my best friend in Dubai a decade ago and was heartbroken when she moved 3 years ago. Worse than any breakup. We stay in touch on WhatsApp, but I'm so jealous of the friend she sees every day and feel like we're drifting apart. You really do need that face-to-face time to stay close. Why can't we be friends? We are talking about friendship this afternoon on The Couch, joined in the studio by Chastity O'Connell, mental health counsellor at the Human Relations Institute and Clinic, here to offer some emotional support and some expert advice on the topic of friendship. Chastity, you've got questions coming in. We're going to get to them. Sarah's messaged in saying, great topic. Can you give your professional opinion on mixing up our children's class every year? It's our school's policy. I worry that our kids will miss out on making those amazing childhood friendships we had growing up. What do you think?
I appreciate the question because I do think it's a question that many parents have. What is the effect of mixing up the classroom? In a lot of ways, it depends on how the school handles it and how that gets messaged to families. So we know that children can be incredibly resilient, and that they're based on socially supportive classroom management policies that are going on, that they can certainly establish friendships in an environment where they feel safe, supported, nurtured, and so I wouldn't be terribly concerned about them missing out on friendships. And in fact, what is nice about mixing up the classroom is that it allows children to go through the process of making friends, and as well as navigating maybe challenging relationships, because not everybody in their classroom is going to be someone who they're going to be friends with, but also how to deal with that when that person isn't around them. So they only see them on the playground or they see them at lunchtime.
So you have to seek out the people that you want and work hard at a friendship, actually, which is definitely the case for real life.
Absolutely. So there's some important lessons that can be learned there. At the same time, I think sometimes families can meet it with reservation, because it's that the benefits, the potential benefits, aren't communicated clearly enough, and they're not, it's not emphasized. So I wouldn't be concerned about it. And in fact, that's where it's wonderful to have a conversation with your child and use it as a growing opportunity, which is, oh, they're going to change, the classroom next year, but, it'll be exciting. You'll get to meet some new friends. You'll still get to hold on to your old friends. We can have play dates. So this is all about building resilience and flexibility and helping children navigate.
What about the parents, Chastity? Because we do seem to spend that time, there's always the class WhatsApp group. yes. Could it be more anxiety on the parents' point of view, going, well, I've met my friends now. Am I going to have to, ditch them and make a whole other group of parent friends in the new classroom?
Frankly speaking, I think more anxiety comes from the parents when they decide to mix up the classrooms than it does actually come from the children. And it's for the reason that you stated right there, which is there might be some fantastic experience where parents are like, oh my goodness, this is the best year group we've ever had. I want to keep this group together. And I can empathize with that. It's not easy coming together in an expat community and going through this, exciting but awkward and uneasy process of, getting comfortable with people in it. And people really, they need that level of comfort with other people. It really is important.
But in the same sense, we're saying to the kids, you're going to meet new people and it's going to be exciting. That's still the case for us as parents, to kind of go, you could meet someone really amazing next year who's, you never knew existed.
Absolutely.
Until your kids are put into the same class.
Absolutely. And there is an element that, there are going to be some teachers that children don't gel with. There are going to be some students that they just don't get on with. And it is way more important to empower the child to navigate that and to be able to sit with that rather than constructing an artificial environment where it's always to their advantage. So, you know, resiliency is born from challenge. And so don't worry. I think it's going to be an exciting experience for your child. And even if it isn't ideal, it'll be an incredible learning and growing opportunity.
Hope that helps, Sarah. A message here from Nora saying, Dubai is such a transient place. It makes it hard to bother making new friends every cycle. I think I've become a hermit now. Fed up, to be honest, and think of leaving every summer, but my kids' school stability keeps me here. That does speak to the transient nature of so many expat places. How do people make friends here? You know, that's the... I always think that Dubai is an incredibly welcoming city and environment for making friends. I think about if I was to move to London and didn't know anybody, or I just can't even imagine how difficult that would be. So if you've got any tips for making friends, do get in touch. Now, Chastity O'Connell, we've had quite a few messages coming in on the topic of friendship that we're going to deal with. It's so emotive, isn't it? We've all been in that scary place about needing to make new friends, and that might be in the workplace or at the school gate or the schoolyard or going along to an event.
Your neighbours.
And neighbours, yes. Mm-hmm. That's so true. Mm. And having that anxiety of, oh God, I need some people around me. And then you have the maintaining the friendships of the busyness of everybody's lives and really having to work hard. And then we've got the drifting apart, which we're going to come to later in the show. And then you've got the breaking up. And I'm seeing more and more in the media about people breaking up friendships. Mm. So if you've had an experience of this, do get in touch. In terms of, have you ever been dumped as a friend? Or have you ever tried to ditch a friend and it hasn't worked? And why did you choose to make that decision? Question here from Magna saying, we moved to Dubai in February and I'm finding it really hard to meet anyone, never mind friends. I'm quite shy, so find it hard to introduce myself to big groups of mums and I'm not working. Any ideas?
I think that will resonate with so many listeners out there. So there's, you know, Dubai, thankfully, has really come up as far as different community initiatives that are going on. So there's certainly the classic coffee morning, which is, you know, as we shared earlier, it's not easy. It really is almost like going into an interview, really nerve-wracking. But there's some less sort of anxiety provoking ways, and those are things like volunteering. If there are different initiatives, there's a lot of going green, there's some particularly now community initiatives, so different voluntary groups, hobby groups, you know, there's amazing sewing groups, knitting groups, photography groups.
And, you know, as we are in Ramadan as well, lots of charity initiatives going on who Absolutely. Are looking for volunteers. So in terms of timing, that might help. One of the most successful ways I've seen on social media being used for this is people showing a little bit of vulnerability. So going onto a community page or going onto, you know, the likes of Real Mums of Dubai and saying, hi, I'm living in wherever. I have a 6-year-old son. And does anyone fancy doing a play date? I haven't met anybody yet. Would love to, you know, would love to meet up with you guys. And it's always really heartwarming to see people going, yep, just around the corner from you. My kid's 8, but I think they could play really nicely together. We do this every Tuesday afternoon. Do you fancy joining? But you do need sometimes to take that step. And that step might be emailing a volunteer group and saying, you know, do you need an extra pair of hands? Or it might be just literally sitting, typing, and putting yourself out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and finding something. I think oftentimes there's such a focus on trying to find the friends that we forget that we're part of the friendship equation. And so taking this time to think, what is something that I've always wanted to do that I haven't been able to do? What is something that I'm really interested in? And it could be, you know, volunteering. It could be a book club. It could be taking that art class. Or there's a number of universities that offer that you can sit in on a class or that you can attend a class. And, you know, having lectured at a number of them, there's a lot of returning, you know, what do you call them? Mature students that are coming and taking classes. And it connects them. It's a really fascinating situation to watch, because presumably you're taking a class on something that you're interested in. And so right from the start, you're surrounded by people that are interested in something that you are too, so much so that you're willing to invest resources and your time in doing it. So I think part of what's difficult in Dubai is that there isn't this sort of central hub. Mm-hmm. So it does require a little bit of, certainly the, as you mentioned earlier, Helen, the stepping out, but there's also kind of, where do I even start? And it can feel quite overwhelming. So I would say start with yourself. What are you interested in? What is something you've wanted to do?
Magna, hope that helps. Do get in touch to share your thoughts on this topic. We're here until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We've got some great music coming up for you as well. And lots of people entering our competition to tell us just what that TV show is. Now, we're talking then about a listener looking to find probably other mums. What do you think are the key differences between male friendships and female friendships, Chastity?
Female friendships in general tend to be more centered on expressing, connecting, social support, whereas male friendships tend to be a little bit more related to doing things together.
Like a hobby or taking a trip.
Yes. Or this is my cycling buddy. This is my running buddy.
My husband has that. He's got he's doing his master's. This is my study friend. I'm like, oh, study friend.
Exactly. Or, we're in the sailing club together. Yeah. Or this is our,
five-a-side football or whatever.
Yeah. Thursday night card game or board game night. So they tend to have more of a purpose involved. But, there's lots of relationships that refute that tendency as well. So, in general.
I hope that helps. Now, do get in touch. Join the conversation on the topic of friends. When we come back, we're going to be answering your questions live on Dubai Today.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell. Shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
The White Stripes there with We Are Going to Be Friends. Chastity O'Connell air guitaring in the studio this afternoon. Multi-talented mental health counsellor and air guitar expert.
I'm pretty bad with an air guitar.
And you were pretty good to me.
Thank you.
Do get in touch with your questions for Chastity talking about friendship. And that could be any problems you're having with friends. It could be jealousy in a friendship. It could be a friendship that's breaking down and you don't know how to deal with it. It could be perhaps a member of your family who's having a hard time navigating their friends as well. Message here from Zoo saying, my 11-year-old is now not too enamored to make good friends as she has lost a best friend every year in the last 3 years. She's constantly asking when we're moving back so she can see them more often than not. I really hope that change of environment and going to secondary school would help. That's tough for kids.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. And I think as parents, we look at that and we see the pain and the hurt that they're going through and certainly take some of that upon ourselves. And that can ultimately influence how we're able to connect with them and sort of allow them the space to validate the sort of loss that they're going through. So in situations like that, I think it's really important that parents are able to connect with their empathy of what their child is going through rather than saying, you'll get to talk with them. You'll make new friends. We have a tendency, we just want to take the pain away. And so in this situation, losing three friends, a friend each year for 3 years is hard, and allowing them the space to recognize that that's hard, being there, listening to them. And at the same time, if it does seem that things are getting worse and not better, then it definitely does not hurt to reach out to someone to help get some guidance on how to handle this and how to support your child.
Hope that helps, Zoo. A message here, no name on this one, saying, I'm 42 and my wife has a very active social life. always out with her friends. I can't help but feel like she thinks I'm a bit of a loser for not having more mates, but I don't know how to turn colleagues into friends or even meet anyone who might want to get a coffee. What do men do on mate dates? I'm clueless.
Oh, I love this. A mandate. I think there's a movie called Mandate, isn't there?
We need a bromance.
Yes. So what do we do? I think this is, you know, what you're raising is a key, I think, struggle for a lot of people. And it just underscores that desire for connection, that desire to, you know, meet with people who are going to have your back and you have theirs. And so I would, you know, suggest taking the time to look at what it is you're interested in doing. I know I don't want to sound like a broken record or repetitive, but to find the kind of connections that are important to you, it's, you know, having looking inward and trying to understand what is something I've been wanting to do. Do I take that sailing class? Do I go to that?
Check out that climbing wall.
Absolutely.
Or whatever that might be. What about also reaching out to his wife and saying, can we do something as a couple?
And certainly.
There could be some husbands out there who are potential mandates.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, your spouse is, I think people often emphasize the importance of having a friend in your spouse. They are your best friend. And so nurturing.
What if they're not, though?
What if they're not?
Yeah, what if they're not? Because I've had friends who've broken up in relationships, and they had everything in that. They had, you know, their partner and their best friend in one person. And then when the relationship's over, you are without a partner and a best friend. Mm.
Then in those situations, it's
brutal.
It is. Divorce is hard. Breaking up is incredibly difficult on everybody for a number of reasons. So, you know, the idea is that, you know, looking at relationships, looking at marriages, it is important to cultivate a friendship with your partner. It really, really is. And in fact, you know, when we're looking at what distinguishes really, really healthy, happy relationships from those that aren't, it's the quality of the friendship that really comes down.
Question here from LJ saying, since separating with my wife a year ago, I cut all social media ties by defriending across all platforms. It was one of the most liberating things I have done. But a year on, I'm slowly starting to use social media again. There are people I want to reconnect with, but how do I do that?
So there are people you want to reconnect with. I think what's amazing is just trying it. You know, sending that message, hey, I haven't spoken to you in a while. I know a lot's been going on. And reaching out. You'd be surprised how compassionate people are.
A message here from Mark saying, we have different friends for different reasons and different seasons.
Mm.
That's so true.
Yes, and the research supports this as well. You often hear really nice quotations like, you know, a friend for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And I think what's really beautiful about that is that it honors that the sort of variability with friendship, that not everybody that you're close with at one point is going to necessarily be with you 20, 30 years from now, but you can still honor and appreciate, you know, the role of that friendship at the time. So I think it just is wonderful to know that there are different types of friendship and they come in different ways and oftentimes when we need them the most.
There's a quote here by Anais Nin. It says, each friend represents a world in us, a world possibly not born until they arrive, and it is only by this meeting that a new world is born. Now, when we come back, we're going to be talking toxic friendships. When should you cut the ties? And if you want to cut the ties, how exactly do you do it? We're talking the signs you should be looking for, about breaking up. It's hard to do, but should you do it? Stay with us. This is Dubai Today.
What do I do when my love is away? Does it worry you to be alone?
The Beatles, of course. Tech by a little bit of help from my friends. I'm Helen Farmer. This is Dubai Today. We are talking about friendship as I'm joined by Chastity O'Connell from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. She's a mental health expert, counsellor here to counsel you through this often tricky topic.
It is very tricky.
I think we've all had good experiences, and so many of us have had bad experiences. Emotionally charged friendships, friendships falling apart, and not even knowing why that's happened. We've had LJ on the phone earlier asking about reconnecting with people after going off social media. He's saying, I guess what I'm asking is, how do I go from actively ignoring people to reconnecting without looking like a heel?
LJ, I love that you followed up with some clarifying sort of inquiries about that. Sounded so stodgy. I'm so glad that you followed up and said, no, this is what I'm trying to ask you. So one of the things I would suggest is ask yourself, what do you think might happen in reaching out? Because it sounds like there's some maybe internal worries or fears about how they might react. And so if you can sort of think about what you think might happen, and then even worst case, what's the worst that might happen? Let's say you send that message that says, hi, I just wanted to reach out. I've been thinking about you a lot lately, and, it was a really difficult time for me a year ago, and, you can talk about all, whatever those experiences, if you like. And so you're sending this message out, and what's the worst case scenario? What comes back, and what's the worst of message that you can envision coming back? And so I think, and then if you can sort of worst case that, you can, prepare yourself a little bit for, and prepare is not the right word. You can sort of look at what your fear is right in front of you in black and white. And oftentimes when people do that, they find this is a really helpful exercise. They're like, well, no, that person isn't like that. They
would never do that.
They would never do that. So asking yourself, what's holding you back? What is the thing that is keeping you from reaching out? So I hope that helps. And in some ways it is, I think there, I can hear some fear there. So just asking yourself questions about what's holding you back and what are you afraid of?
Hope that helps, LJ. A message here from Anna saying, hi, I'm 40 years old. I get tongue-tied meeting new people, hence I can't go beyond highs and hellos. And even if I get through that, I feel unable to form a deep best friend type relationships. I think there's two things going on here. One talking about shyness, but also one talking about this kind of fetishization of best friend, how everyone feels like they have to have this best friend, and everyone's got this magical relationship that a lot of people actually don't have. We see so much of this on the screen and in literature, Thelma and Louise, Bill and Ted, the Carrie, Charlotte, Miranda, Samantha, we see it so much of the topic of friendship being really put on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. And the simple fact is not everybody has those relationships.
No.
And there's actually nothing wrong with that, as long as you do feel like you're getting your connection from somewhere and you've got someone to talk to. But any tips for overcoming shyness of, as Anna says, feeling tongue-tied and not being able to get past that hello and hi?
Sure. So some questions I would ask would be, do you find that this only happens when you are in social situations, or does it also happen when you are at work or when you're interacting with other people on a day-to-day basis? This gives us an indication of, is this, shyness, or is it something that could be reflective of maybe some struggles with some underlying anxieties that it might be helpful to talk with someone about, to learn some more, to certainly understand your situation and offer some concrete strategies on how to navigate what it sounds like are very emotional in reactions to the situation. And so when you're saying the most I can get out is hi or hello, is it that you feel like, if I said something, it might come across the wrong way? Are you afraid that it would sound silly? Is it that you feel like you're, your hands are shaking and you're turning red. So these are the kinds of things, trying to understand what is your, you know, specific experience with these situations. Because there are a number of strategies that can help you sort of allow you the space to say what it is you want to say and start working at the connections that you'd like to make with people.
I thought you were going to advise some exposure therapy there.
That is essentially, you work up to it. So everything is exposure therapy. But first it is understanding, you know,
where that anxiety is coming from.
Yeah. And is it related to feeling like you have to say the right thing? And I think you also hit it on the head as well, Helen, when you were talking about expectations. You know, is there so much riding on this one interaction that it feels like it's all or nothing? Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, that's going to be really high stakes and that's going to be very stressful for you. And so all of that can be looked at more effectively by just chatting with someone about it.
We were talking earlier about mixing kids up at school. Mm-hmm. Got a message here, no name, not saying, in my children's school, kids are shuffled every year, so they're not with just one friend. I believe it helps them grow their social skills. Rohan saying, I call everyone my friend, and that drives my girlfriend a little mad. But to me, friends are people that I have a good time with, not necessarily close. But to her, friends are more about those handful of people. And Petra saying, my tolerance has become less as I get older. I've had to let go of a dear friend who is a wonderful person, but always seemed to feel that I was not having her back and that I upset her. My side, I felt I went above and beyond. In the end, I decided to walk away. I just felt, if you're not enjoying me or who I am, I'm done. I think that's the case as we do get older, we start to edit, and that sounds like a kind of a harsh way of putting it, but we start to work out which friendships make sense for us and which ones don't, and which mm-hmm. ones take up time. We know we're all busy people. Good afternoon, sir. Is that Rahul?
Yes, this is me, Rahul. How are you?
We're well, thank you. How can we help you this afternoon? You've had some experiences of being hurt in the past, I understand.
Yes, first of all, good afternoon to you guys. I mean, you guys are really good. I mean, Dubai Eye is doing a lot of good shows that I really feel inspiring to talk to you guys about different topics that you cover.
Thank you so much.
My question is, it's not about me and my friends. It's about my general tendency. So maybe I'm going around a bit. But I have this tendency of making good with everyone. If mistakes can happen from both the sides. I have friends who are like 2 years old, but they're really good. Mm-hmm. And I have friends who are like maybe 20 years old, but they're not very close to me as I am to them. Normally, friendship, I feel, is it's an equal equal. If you are honest to your friend and there is no boundaries, you have to be openly honest. You can't be selective honest. You cannot select things that, okay, I will tell this guy only this much and not this much. For me, I say everything. My life is an open book to my friends. But sometimes what happens is in a phase where somebody's not doing too well, they don't share stuff. Maybe they're not feeling too comfortable. And once something goes wrong with them, really, then they come back to me and then they talk to me and then maybe cry and confess that, okay, I was not honestly or openly honest to you at the last time we spoke and stuff like that. Most of the times I end up hurting myself. So I'm feeling that, is it my problem that I want to have this tendency of making good with everyone? Should I try to be a little bit more stubborn and saying that, okay, let it go? Or is it okay? Is it like a good thing that I want to keep good relation with everyone? And I'm not being selective about anyone. And even with age, this tendency, I was, you know, more of like a person who was not compatible with too many people before. But now with age, I'm becoming more and more compatible. I'm trying to, you know, adapt to a lot of things with other people. I'm getting used to their flaws or, you know, things that could normally irritate me in my past and now not irritating me at all.
So my question I'm is saying, okay? Yeah, you're getting more chilled as you get older, Rahul. So your question is, should you...
Is it okay for me to be like this, or do you think, is it going to be hurting me too much in the future? You know, something that can be done about it?
Mm-hmm. You are who you are, you mm-hmm. know, and you shouldn't be really moderating your behaviour if that's going to make you feel uncomfortable or unhappy. But I'd be interested to hear what Chastity's got to say.
Sure. So I'd love to understand what you mean by making good with everyone, because you also mentioned that is something that's different perhaps to how you were, you know, in the past. What does it mean to make good with everyone?
Make good means if I have a fight with a friend, I'll be the first one to always go and talk back. Okay. I will never wait for the guy to respond. Even if I make a mistake, if he makes a mistake, I'll be the one to always go first. So even all my friends know that, okay, they take me for granted. So okay, fighting with Rahul is not like a fight. I mean, he's going to come back any day.
So you're a peacemaker, and do you feel like you're maybe being taken advantage of a little bit? And I hate the phrase doormat, but you know what I mean? They know that you're always going to be there as a friend no matter what they do.
Exactly, yeah, maybe. I don't feel like a doormat because I feel that, I believe in God, so I'm just going to quote, I'm sorry to some non-believers listening to my topic. I feel that God has placed people in your life just to learn how to manage them. This is the basic management skill that you should have, that everybody is planted in your life for a reason, and you cannot just cut away people from your life. This is what I believe. It's my personal philosophy. So this is why I feel that, okay, nothing is bigger than being friends, or nothing is bigger than being in talking terms.
Okay.
But sometimes, yeah.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay, but sometimes I feel a little bit hurt because, you know, okay, I was thinking about this person and I was sharing everything with that person, and now that he is going through a difficult time and he comes back to me and shares things with me that he never shared before. Okay. So obviously the friendship is becoming better because but the person comes back and tells me things that he never shared. So he is considering me much better friend than I was before. So ultimately it's a good thing for me. But sometimes I get too hurt and too sad that why do people do like this?
Sure.
And why am I like this?
Okay. Well, here's some thoughts for you, Rahul. I love that you're sharing this. One is sort of asking yourself, what could be feeding this desire to be making good with everyone? You mentioned that your faith is important to you, and so perhaps that plays a role, but, you know, looking specifically at a situation. So we can take the situation that you just had with your friend, where you felt like you needed to go back and call them first and reach out first. And
yes.
Thinking about what were some of the thoughts that you were having that was feeding why you had to be the first one. And this isn't to say that you should or should not have been, but giving us understanding as to, you know, what are your motivations for trying to make good with everyone? Is it that you feel that, oh, this is what I should do, this is what the right thing to do is, or is it, you know what, I really care about this person. I think they're going through a rough space right now, and this friendship is important to me. Because how you answer that question is going to give you some insight into how you sort of resolve it. If you feel like you're pressured and that you should do it, then part of you doesn't get to get honored
actually,
and recognized.
I like to interrupt a little bit.
Sure,
no, I don't feel pressured, honestly. It could be a friend of 2 days as well, and I feel compelled to speak to that person. It's built in my system. It's not that the person is important to me. It could be anybody.
Hmm.
But even if something has gone wrong with someone, I would always want it to be good. I cannot sleep that night if I have a fight with someone and go to sleep.
Okay.
So it's my personal nature like that. So I just am a little bit curious. Is it okay? Are there people who are like me? Or is it a little bit not okay? So I should think on it and change a little bit of my personal habits.
Well, I can't answer whether or not it's okay or not. And that's simply because your situation is far more, there's far more involved there. And I don't want to, you know, sort of dismiss all the important intricacies of it. But what I would find, what I do think would be helpful for you is to think about certainly what's driving you to pick up the phone, but also on a practical purpose of looking at what does it mean to be honest. You mentioned this importance of honesty has come up a number of times, and that it's important to be completely honest. And what does that mean in a practical day-to-day basis? Does it mean that people have to tell you, you know, what they're thinking and feeling in that exact moment? Because sometimes people may not know. And so sort of reflecting on what's driving you, and also finding a way to honor that you get hurt as well. So don't push away your hurt. Don't push away how you may feel in the friendship. And when you do that, when you're able to think about, you know, how you've been hurt in a friendship and be able to speak to that, to share that, share how that's impacted you, then I think that's going to give you the answer of whether or not it's okay.
Hope that helps, Rahul, and all the very best moving forward to you and your friendships. Question here, Chastity, saying, I have a friend for the last 14 years and slowly I've been pulling away from the relationship as she is very draining. Everything is always negative and bad news, and to be fair, she has had a rough few years. My question is, how long do you keep trying to cheer her up and help, and yet she doesn't listen to advice and just drains me emotionally?
I think it's a great topic, because I think it's something that a lot of people can relate to, and at the same time, it is common. And
I think a lot of people will be thinking, yeah, I know someone like that in my life.
Absolutely. Sure. Where it's, you know, how do I, you know, this is someone who I've known for 14 years. How do I be a good friend to them? At the same time, it is emotionally and psychologically taxing and draining on me. If it's been going on for a while, it may be worthwhile sort of mentioning to your friend they might need to reach out for support that's above and beyond what you can give. And this is where it might be worthwhile for them to connect with a mental health professional, a psychologist. At the same time, it's also important that you're able to maintain, you know, a healthy emotional state of mind. So in those situations, you know, I guess some questions would be, you know, when you think about the next month or the next 6 months, you know, how do you envision your friendship with that person taking shape? And it may not be an all or nothing, like, oh, you know, they're extremely draining on me, I can't see them ever again. It might be something like, you know, maybe you structure the time differently where it's a limited time. Maybe you, you know, restrict some of, you know, the time that you spend together so it's not so emotionally draining. And part of it might be just communicating, you know, how you are feeling with this person in a very compassionate and kind way, which is, things are really difficult for you. I feel like I'm trying to be there for you. At the same time, I feel like I'm, you know, out of words or, you know, out of resources to help. And so what, you know, asking them, what do you think would help you right now? So there's a lot of, I guess, possibilities for how you manage this, but it is important. And one of the things we'll talk about is toxic relationships. And I'm not saying that this one is a toxic friendship at all. I'm just saying it's worth having the internal discussion with yourself on, How do I see this happening? What do I see? What can I reasonably do?
And also, how does that friendship make you feel? If it makes you feel heavy, if it makes you full of dread about seeing that person's name coming up on your phone screen, mm-hmm. or if you've got, you know, a date in the diary in the future where you're going to get together and you think, oh, I just really want to get out of it. Should you just break up with people quick, Chastity? How do we break up with friends?
How do you break up with friends? Well, and there's, in the true clinical fashion, we say it depends. And so because there's a vested relationship here and there's so many sensitivities involved, part of that is offering suggestions on how to think about it rather than offering like straight up guidance. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if you were to Google toxic friendship, you know, you'll find a number of really great articles that say, if someone is draining you, if you are feeling emotionally depleted, if you're feeling unheard and not getting anything from the friendship, then it's time to cut them loose.
Cut them loose.
How though? However, I'm at the same time,
it's so much more complicated than
it
that.
It is way more complicated. And at that point, have you communicated how you feel to the person mm-hmm. that is sort of the spark of how you're feeling about the relationship? So I think the first step, especially if this is a friendship that you have a history with and it's, you've invested a lot of time with, that it is worth it and important to, you know, be able to be honest with them and say, I feel like, you know, I'm trying everything and I don't know what to say. And, you know, it is, you know, the way you are right now is taxing our friendship because I find myself pulling away from you. And then seeing how they respond to that, because I think sometimes people are in really bad positions and they mm-hmm. don't understand it. And it's not your job to be their therapy. Straight up. It's, you know, where friendship is reciprocal. But that reciprocity doesn't mean that it's 50-50. Sometimes it's 60-40. Sometimes it's 30-70. So I want to honor the fact that, you know, to be there for a friend is an important gift just as much as having a friend there for us. So looking at, you know, have you communicated how you feel with your friend and allowed them the opportunity to try to do things differently?
Okay, I hope that helps. Let's have a little clip of one of my favorite films, Mean Girls, All Getting a Bit Mean.
Look how red she is. You love him, and he totally complimented you. That is so fetch. Gretchen, stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen. Why should Caesar get to stomp around like a giant while the rest of us try not to get smushed under his big feet? What's so great about Caesar? Brutus is just as cute as Caesar. Okay, Brutus is just as smart as Caesar. People totally like Brutus just as much as they like Caesar. And when did it become okay for one person to be the boss of everybody, huh? Because that's not what Rome is about. We should totally just stab Caesar!
All getting a bit heated
Gretchen
on Mean Girls.
Head cracked.
Now, get in touch with your questions, talking about friendship. Huge topic and lots of questions coming in. Now, what, to your mind, is a toxic friendship, Chastity O'Connell?
A toxic friendship. Well, what I'll do, rather than defining what a toxic friendship is, I'd love to give some questions to keep in mind on what a healthy relationship or a healthy friendship is. And so, and this, I think, will end up answering the question of what is toxic. So we know that the researchers doing conducting research on friendship have different questionnaires for assessing the quality of a friendship. And I'm just going to run down a few of those qualities. You know, is there validation and caring? Does the person make you feel good about yourself, good about your ideas, good about the things that you pursue, your goals in life? Do they offer help and guidance? Do they, you know, offer support? Do they offer companionship? Are you able to do fun things together? Is there an exchange of intimacy? And this is about being able to be vulnerable with that person, being able to share ideas, share fears, and so forth. And also, what does the sort of what does conflict look like? And friendships don't have to be conflict-free, but is the conflict healthy? Is it in a constructive way? And how do you resolve that conflict? Does it stay in the past, or does it come up? Does it feel like, you know, things are actually resolved and they're better and stronger than before? Or is it a kind of, I'm sorry you feel that way? And if you think
that's never an apology, is it?
It's not.
It's not saying I'm sorry. It's saying I'm sorry you feel that way.
Yes, it is a backhanded apology.
Doesn't count.
And what's interesting in looking at those, a lot of it does sound like sort of qualities that you would find in a healthy marriage. And so when you're looking at toxic relationships, it's like, do you feel validated? Do you feel cared about? Do you feel like that person gives you guidance, that they give you help, that there's companionship, that you can be vulnerable with that person? Or do you feel guarded? Do you feel like there's you can't trust them, that it's emotionally draining and depleting? Do you feel like conflict is high in the friendship? And even when there is some kind of resolution, even when there is an apology, it either doesn't feel authentic, it doesn't feel real, or it doesn't stay in the past where it belongs. And so toxic relationships are those where we feel less than in the friendship. We don't feel like there's parity there. We don't feel like we're an equal part, and that our needs don't matter. Our who we are doesn't matter.
Message here, no name on this one, saying, my very best friend of 20 years and I worked together for a year. We broke up because while on my annual leave, she fired me by sending a formal email. I'm devastated and heartbroken. It's been over a year and I still can't get over her. I'm so lonely and I could be in a room full of people and still feel all alone. I've joined many different groups and different classes and community gatherings, but I'm still so hurt and alone. I've met many amazing people, but feel unable to connect with them. What can I do?
So what I want to focus on in this situation is just how painful and in a lot of ways traumatic this breakup sounds. And so when we're looking at this, you know, a friendship that has been together more than 20 years, it sounds like there was also a work relationship involved, and then having it, you know, the friendship breakup over being fired, there's a lot of complexities to this situation. And so in many ways, it can feel like a divorce. And so I think it's important to acknowledge just how difficult and painful this is. And if you think about it, you've had this person in your life for 20 years. And, you know, 20 years from an emotional perspective, but 20 years from a practical perspective. So this is maybe a person that you talked with every other day, or that you would go for meals with, or that you'd call when you were stressed. So there's all these sort of micro supports and micro ways that you've reached out in little ways that you're now trying to find, you're trying to cope with.
Yeah, and recalibrate everything.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what I would say is certainly give yourself time. And the fact that you've, you know, been joining different groups and trying to reach out, I think that's incredible. So I would say this sounds just as painful as someone going through a divorce, and to give yourself compassion and patience as you navigate through this. And again, if it feels like you're having difficulty sort of functioning, that it's that things aren't getting better or a little bit easier for you, then by all means reach out to a professional, and they can help you certainly understand and explore the pain that you're going through, as well as offer different tools and approaches that you can try to help navigate this really difficult time.
Okay, I hope that helps. Message here is simply asking, can people from different social and income classes become and stay friends?
Yes.
Is that all you're going to say?
That's all I'm going to say.
No, Chastity O'Connell, please elaborate.
I will. It's, you know, I love saying it depends. So yes, it is definitely possible. So at the same time, what we end up finding that's more challenging is when two people are the same socioeconomic status level, and one experiences an increase in income or has a bump to their sort of financial status. And when it seems like when friends are in transition, that's when it becomes challenging, because it can become easy to look at a person who is advancing perhaps faster than you are, that they're changing, that, you know, it's going to their head. There's all sorts of inferences that we can make about someone's sort of increase in financial status or increase in socioeconomic status. So people can, and the more difficult ones tend to be when one is transitioning. But in those situations where two people are from different socioeconomic statuses, most importantly, like many other friendships, it's important to communicate. So if you think about what friends do, maybe going out together, going shopping together, playing a game together, and being open and communicative and mindful about the cost of those. So if you like going to, because you are able to afford it, really expensive restaurants, you know, there's an understanding of how the other person may feel. Mm-hmm. And friendships are able to navigate through that, saying, you know, well, when we go, you know, when I get to pick the restaurant, I pay. And when I pick the restaurant, I pay. So you allow that person sort of, although it may not be financial parity, you allow them sort of respect parity, mm-hmm. and allowing them to contribute to the relationship or to the friendship in the way that they can. So it's really important to have that communication and allowing parity. That's a key component of friendship, is this idea that there's equality there.
I think that speaks to a question that we've had in on the text line, and no name on this one, saying, it's a little bit sensitive, but my best friend's problems to get pregnant are causing issues between us. I'm pregnant now, only 10 weeks, but I'm scared to tell her, as I know she'll be devastated, even though she'll say all the right things. How can I deal with this?
Wow, that is a sensitive one. Again, I think the important part is coming to that person with an open and gracious heart, but also allowing them the space to, you know, say all the right things, but to, if they need to sort of have a little space, mm-hmm. to be able to process that. And then communicating about that when both are ready. So this isn't anything new. In fact, a number of friendships have gone through this very same situation and have navigated it beautifully. And so it really comes down to being vulnerable and open yourself and allowing the other person space. I mean, that's what friendship is about. It's acknowledging that I know that what I'm about to say to you may hurt you. I know you, and it may, you know, the duality of it, it may hurt you and you may be happy at the same time for me. And I appreciate that. And, you know, I want to be respectful of you. At the same time, I want to celebrate this as well. And you're an important part of my life. So it really is just being able to sit with this idea that, you know, it's more than just, there's more involved here.
Okay, I really hope that helps. Message here from Tish saying, my grandmother was married 4 times. Relationships came and went, but it was her friends who stood up at her funeral and spoke of 60 years of friendship. Joined this afternoon by Chastity O'Connell, here to talk about friendship and helping you navigate any problems, concerns, or just a few questions you might have on the topic. One that's come in here, and I'm very intrigued to get your take on this, because I think this happens an awful lot. Saying, please no name, I feel silly getting upset about this, but I introduced some friends last year as one couple was new to Dubai and wanted to widen their social circle. Maybe I was being naive, ! But I thought, hoped that they would include me in their meetups, but I've seen pics on Instagram of nights out, the kids together and even weekends away. I feel really hurt and don't know what to do. Should I let them know how upset I am or just walk away from them both?
Oh, this is that leapfrogging.
So you sent me an email saying we have to talk about leapfrogging. And I was like, what are you talking about? What is leapfrogging?
So leapfrogging, I think they tend to call it that in the UK. In the States, it might be friend poaching or friend stealing.
Oh, I've done that.
But then you might be better equipped to answer it. Yeah, the idea that it's interesting in the friendship research, 20% of the reason why friendships dissipate or friendships fail to thrive are that due to new friendships. And so that's a really sad message, isn't it? So I don't want to leave it with that. But, you know, there is this hope that you would have been a part of their life. And, you know, I would ask yourself, you know, to what extent are either persons still friends with you and that you still communicate with openly and honestly, sort of checking in on the status of or the health of the friendship that you have with those folks right now. And what is that like? And is that, you know, a friendship that you find, you know, supportive, encouraging, healthy and helpful? Or has their friendship with someone new brought out qualities in them that maybe don't resonate with you? And although it's important to acknowledge that you feel hurt, and that's reasonably so, especially when you have the internet sort of throwing it in your face.
Doesn't help. We were talking earlier about friendships ending. And I think it's so difficult when friendships end because sometimes you don't even know it's happened. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in a romantic relationship, there's a definite end. Mm-hmm. It might be divorce. It might be someone moving out. You have the row that ends it all. But with a friendship, sometimes it can be a simple drifting apart. Mm-hmm. So we've got a question here. This is from Max that came in on the text line saying, I had a long-term friendship once. He was a high school acquaintance and it went gradually from there up to best friend in our senior year of college. We even moved to the UAE together. But then our lifestyles grew so different that we rarely met. By the time that came, we had a misunderstanding. Our relationship just broke. Never met or chatted after. I don't know what to do next. Do I reach out after 2 years or are we already in two distant worlds that simply bridges can't connect them?
You know, in the earlier video that you rolled, is that what I call it?
The clip I played.
Thank you.
You're very welcome,
I'm getting a bit better with my radio lingo. One of the researchers talked about the different types of friendship, that there's active friendships, that there's commemorative ones, and that there's dormant. And so I think that is a more constructive way to look at friendships rather than it's done and dusted. Mm-hmm. And what it sounds like is maybe this fell into the kind of commemorative relationship that's there. you're not quite sure, you know, what the status is like, but it might be something that you could dust off the shelf and sort of have a look
at. You can bring friendships back to life. Sometimes
totally
in the case
can.
Of, I'm much like a relationship, it can be right people, wrong time.
Absolutely.
And if you want to, if the desire is there, there might be desire on the other side as well to be back in touch.
Sure. And oftentimes, you know, I think this is similar to LJ's situation that we spoke about earlier, where what's holding you back from reaching out, you know, and what could be the spark for why you're interested in rekindling the friendship in the first place? Is it something where, you know, things could have been handled differently? I'd mm-hmm. like to go back in time. I'd like to give it another shot. All fair reasons for trying to rekindle a friendship. So I think it's important to look at, you know, what is it about this friendship that you would like to say what maybe went unsaid, as well as knowing that it's there. If you're here, he's here. You know, it's certainly, and then thinking about, like, what's the worst that could happen? You know, it's not unreasonable to try and reach out and understanding that it could rekindle something great, or it could be a, you know, a nice, oh, thanks for reaching out. Glad to hear you're well. Let's, you know, grab a coffee sometime.
You never know where it might
be. You never know.
Chastity Connell, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Let me leave you with this.
You've got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.